I don't think you can. Because the only reason deposit insurance is credible is if I can issue currency. If I can issue currency, I can say your deposits are absolutely guaranteed. If I can issue currency, I can say your government debt is absolutely guaranteed. Now, the financial system depends on those two things. If you take away or threaten those two obligations, the financial system breaks down and society breaks down. Certainly the financial system as it's been constructed. Now, the problem in the Eurozone crisis was exactly those two fundamental obligations came into question. Right? And that is really what's thrown apart the institutional structure. In other words, people did not know if their deposits were safe, and they did not know if government if government's obligations would be honoured. Now, I should say, in economic theory, actually, there is an assumption that the state has primacy over the central bank. So if anybody looks in an economic textbook, it's assumed that ultimately the central bank is consolidated into the government. So if you look at, for example, the profits that the Bank of England gets made, gets remitted to the UK Treasury, the Fed, and during the financial crisis, you know, finance minister and central bank governor would stand side by side, and that is how things operate. What is genuinely unique about the Eurozone is that the central bank has legal primacy over member states. Now, that is, in many ways, is quite extraordinary. So the truth is, it isn't Angela Merkel is definitively not the most important decision maker in the Eurozone. The single most important decision maker is the president of the European Central Bank. Absolutely, because that is actually the only European institution. And not only that, there's a fascinating aspect of the ECB's regulations, which is the ECB can compel member states to increase its capital. Right? So the ECB can actually say to them, after the Executive Council of the ECB has a vote, they can just command an increase in their capital. And this is precisely why I in London had meetings with new policymakers coming into various European governments when Hollande came to power, his economy minister came over to London, similarly in Italy, and they outline their policies, and I always say to them, you know, have you met with Mario Draghi yet? Because that's the most important meeting. Because actually he ultimately determines what's going to happen here. There is your margin of movement, and this of course does throw up huge issues of democratic legitimacy. I think it's also, for me, very revealing from a purely political perspective. I mean, how many members of the Governing Council, for example, do we know? Does anybody know who the head of the Portuguese Central Bank is? These are very interesting questions, because I actually think not nearly enough attention is being paid to who those people are. The president of the Irish Central Bank is an extremely important individual. Anybody who influences the decision-making of this body in key moments in time is of critical political importance. Right, so what's the solution? What I'd just like to do very quickly is describe why I think monetary policy has become central to economic policymaking, dominant relative to fiscal policy. And I just wanted to very simply outline what the pros and cons of monetary and fiscal policy are, which then I think is a neat way of framing the policy recommendation that myself and others are suggesting in the Eurozone, but also actually as a policy that could be broadened and applied to other countries as well. Now, you can see there immediately that there is much more in favor of monetary policy than there is against it, and relative to fiscal policy as well. And I'll just go through some of the key points. So the one good thing about fiscal policy is that it can affect spending directly. So were the Irish government to announce overnight that there's going to be a cut in income taxes with immediate effect, that would be a boost to spending in the economy pretty much immediately. Even if they announced it, if the Eurozone announced a huge fiscal stimulus, you would immediately get an increase in economic activity, because firms would immediately anticipate that there's going to be an increase in their sales and improvement in their profits. People would already anticipate an increase in demand. So the one good thing about fiscal policy is that it affects spending directly. The second thing is it can be used to support other objectives, like infrastructure, like inequality. The problem is, and this is a fatal flaw in fiscal policy, goes back to the point that people can't agree on it. Right? So it would be great, but we can't agree on it. So every country pursues different routes, different parts of the political spectrum argue about it, vested interests get involved, and as a result, it tends not to be timely. So what happens is infrastructure is a great idea. If infrastructure is a good thing to do, but it's not a good way to manage a recession, because infrastructure takes lots of planning. If it's to be done well, it takes lots of time to execute, and it can become hostage to vested interests. So I'm very much in favor of infrastructure spending. I just don't think it's the right way to stop recessions or indeed to generate recoveries. It's simply not timely. Fiscal policy is very difficult to coordinate, and as I referred to, there are vested interests. Now, what about monetary policy? Well, almost everything is the opposite. So the wonderful thing about monetary policy is you can just have a meeting, you can even have a conference call, and you can do it instantaneously. So decision-making is extremely quick. There is huge consensus, actually, about what to do. So pretty much everywhere in the world has broadly done similar things. I mean, they can argue over QE or LTROs, but effectively they've all been doing the same thing. So there's consensus. It's independent of politics, and so it isn't perceived to be influenced by vested interests. In that sense, it's not ideological. Now, the fatal flaw, in a sense, or the current problem that's being revealed, though, with monetary policy is this key point. Its effects are indirect. If the ECB announces a QE program tomorrow, it actually doesn't affect any of our disposable incomes. And in fact, when you think about it, it works in a very, very convoluted and indirect way. Right? Which is, it requires people to change their balance sheets, so it's trying to encourage people to borrow, it's negative for savers, and it tries to move asset prices, so they try to get the stock market up, housing market up, they try and get the currency down, so indirectly affect people's behavior. And in fact, we've started to realize that there are major limits to this. In the world when interest rates were at 10% and you could slash interest rates, then it had a very pronounced and immediate effect. But when interest rates are pretty close to zero, when people don't want to borrow, when people actually want to save, and asset prices only affect a small segment of the population, particularly if housing itself is being influenced by other factors. So the solution here, it seems to me, is quite clear, which is we want to keep what's good about monetary policy. So we want it to be able to make decisions extremely quickly. You want it to be credible and independent, so subject to an inflation target. Everybody broadly, there is a huge consensus that we want to have a stable rate of inflation. Everybody can agree on that across ideological bounds. We want it to operate independently of a political cycle. But we need to solve this problem. It can't be indirect. We want it to be direct. We want it to affect spending immediately in the way that interest rates used to. If people familiar with the UK, where people borrowed variable rate mortgages, it was effectively, as soon as the Bank of England cut interest rates, households' cash flow got improved instantaneously. We need to find a way where monetary policy increases people's spending immediately. So that comes to what John Muhlbauer, professor of economics at Oxford, has described as QE for the people. And this is the deceptively simple solution, which in my view is largely poses a presentational problem. It's a bit like, you know, if a kind of eight-year-old for some reason kind of wanders into some very serious discussion about economics, and here's Mario Draghi and Ben Bernanke having this discussion. They're all saying there isn't enough aggregate demand. And so, what does that mean? It means they're not spending enough. And the eight-year-old just says, why don't you just give them more money? Well, in fact, I would like to hear their answer. They probably tell them, you know, sorry, you don't understand. It's much more complicated than that. That is, in effect, what Mark Blythe and I and a number of others are recommending, which is that you have a simple solution, which is that you allow that the ECB itself prints money and makes transfers directly to the household sector. John Muhlbauer at Oxford has suggested that you could entirely avoid using governments if you use the electoral register, which is public information, and they just post a check. So post a check of 1,000 euros to everyone on the electoral register in the Eurozone. Now, what will happen? Would it work? The really intriguing thing is, I haven't met an economist who doesn't think it would work. Right? So it doesn't matter what type of an economist you are. I mean, some of them desperately try to say there'd kind of be an instantaneous increase in inflation without any increase in activity. But even them, you know, even very convoluted models show that under very easy assumptions, it'll affect spending. All of the empirical evidence suggests it will increase spending. So George W. Bush, you know, God bless him, did something very similar, probably not realizing this is what he was doing. He did it in 2008, but they called it tax rebates. Now, that's just a name. You can call it a tax rebate if you want to call it a tax rebate, but that's just framing. That's just a description. They gave people a check and the Fed was doing QE at the same time. That's implicitly, that's the same thing. All of the evidence said it increased spending. Had they done a lot more and had they done it continuously, it would have increased spending even more. So the Americans have used tax rebates many times in the past and they've been successful. Now, what most people worry about immediately is that it would cause inflation. Now, this is worth thinking about a little bit. Firstly, we're recommending it should be done subject to the inflation target. So we're doing it to help the ECB actually get somewhere close to their target. So the first key point is that the ECB is miles away from 2%, which was their own definition of price stability. But I personally don't think you want to try and create inflation. Inflation actually isn't the problem. The problem is demand. So I don't really mind if inflation goes up or down. I just want spending to occur and economic recovery to be sustained, investment spending and employment to be created. And what happens to prices is highly unknown. There's not going to be runaway inflation. There's no circumstance in which that's plausible. You know, we're talking about maybe 2-3 percentage points of GDP in much smaller scale than quantitative easing. Right? Quantitative easing, if you look at the United States, the UK and Japan, has been 30-40% of GDP. Right? So if you're worried about inflationary effects from money printing, worry about QE. Here, 2-3 percentage points on any simple economic model, 2-3 percentage points of GDP are going to have a dramatic impact on the economy. And you would persist in doing that. Now, is it legal? I hope I've convinced you that it's legal, because it seems to me that the distinction between fiscal and monetary policy is about whether it's got to do with money, printing money or not. That is the clear delineation. And this would involve printing money by the central bank. In the context of Europe, the distinction between fiscal and monetary policy is defined institutionally. Right? So it's very, very clear that the ECB is not allowed to finance the activities of governments. Well, that's not financing the activity of governments. Right? So this does not depend on the tax policy of Italy or Italy's budget or the French, whether France meets its fiscal targets or not, or what Germany does with its fiscal targets. This would be done independently by the ECB, direct to the population of Europe. I think in many ways, actually, it is fairer than interest rate cuts, in fact. So again, people say, but you know, this wouldn't you be favoring? How do you decide how much to do? The obvious approach is to do it equally to all citizens. That's clear. You just do it equally. Now, when people talk about issues of fairness, that to me is a lot fairer than changing interest rates. I mean, when you change interest rates, there's a very clear winners and losers. Right? So you are punishing, if you want to use moralistic terminology, people who save and favoring those who've been borrowing. If you do QE and you try to drive up asset prices, you're favoring the holders of assets. So these all have distributional consequences. This is why when you actually start to think about what's fiscal and monetary policy, you really do discover that the distinction is by institutional definition. It's very difficult to make the distinction in the abstract. So... I think it is rigorously legal. Now, the interesting question then is why not, and why hasn't it been done elsewhere? Well, as I said, alluded to, policies very similar to this have been done elsewhere. Could it happen in the Eurozone? How probable is that? The honest answer is I don't know. But I'm encouraged, because a lot of serious people are supporting the view. So to give some examples, you now have two former members of the Monetary Policy Committee of the Bank of England who are advocates. So Willem Buiter, who's a Dutch, very renowned Dutch economist and was a member of the Monetary Policy Committee in the UK, has written papers effectively arguing in a very theoretical way. I only recommend them if you like reading through lots of equations, but he has written articles advocating these policies. Sushil Wadhwani, another member of the Monetary Policy Committee, believes that the Bank of England should effectively have the ability to do this. And then Lord Turner, who was the chairman of the FSA, has advocated something very, very close and similar to this. A number of economists at Bocconi University in Milan are advocating something similar. So it is gathering traction. I suspect the main resistance is what I alluded to right at the outset, which is a psychological one. The first thing is that if the ECB were to do it, there's clearly be some administrative challenges. You know, so actually getting the checks out would pose some challenges. So I think innovative ideas in that regard are all welcome. I don't know how, whether an electoral register is robust enough a means. But the how one would actually administer the issue, I think, is a very material challenge. But I think the more profound one is, populations are going to turn around and say, why on earth didn't you do this sooner? Right? There's going to be a lot of very, very embarrassed economists and policymakers who are going to be sort of sitting red-faced as they come up with loads of acronyms that nobody understands, hugely convoluted programs using hundreds of billions, trillions of euros on their balance sheet when all it required was actually 2 or 3% of GDP and a transfer to most of the household sector, and actually recession could have ended quite quickly and a lot of human misery prevented. Actually, that would be quite embarrassing. Anyway, on that cheery note, I'll leave it there.